What about the issue of the Q2 week scheduling and infusion reactions? Where does that fit into your thinking?
Well, that also plays a role. I also have to say our trials are with cetuximab, so we probably will still be using more cetuximab at the moment because of that. But the Q2 week scheduling is nice for our very crowded chemo room at Vanderbilt, so that favors it also. It also does reduce the cost to some extent because you're not paying the infusion costs every week for a societal issue. But we will be using it also because of the infusion reaction. We are in an area where infusion reaction is more common. Most areas, it probably doesn't matter because infusion reactions are so rare with cetuximab.
You know, that came out at the think tank this summer. You were talking about it. Rich Goldberg in North Carolina was talking about it. Other people were saying they don't see it. Do you think that's really real, or do you think it's just sort of a statistical fluke?
Well, we're still working on the paper, but we do think it's real. We do not think it's a statistical fluke just because of the volume of patients we've treated and the volume of patients treated elsewhere. In addition, we have physicians who've transferred in from other areas. New Orleans doesn't have it. We have a physician who transferred after Katrina, took a little while, but who transferred after Katrina, had a neck cancer person who'd worked with cetuximab and had neck cancer for over a year beforehand, never seen an infusion reaction, and has yet to give cetuximab without an infusion reaction at Vanderbilt.
This is in head and neck?
Yeah, in head and neck.
Interesting.
So I think she's just statistically a fluke because we're still running, we're still not running 100% or anything like that. We're running around 15% grade 3-4 infusion reaction rate.
15%.
Yeah, we're running somewhere in that area.
And what other areas have you seen high incidence of infusion reactions?
So the areas with high infusion reactions appear to be some areas in North Carolina, South Carolina, some areas of Tennessee, but not all. As you get up to the higher elevations, whether it's the higher elevation or just the locations, we don't see it there. And we've been told that St. Louis and Kansas City have also seen them, but I don't know all the areas that have seen them.
Do you think that this could be sort of genetic, the host, so to speak, you know, the genetics of the people, the pharmacogenetics of people in certain areas, or do you think it's more environmental?
It has to be more environmental in modern-day America. Our patients don't come from just one area. They come from all over originally. They've lived in the United States elsewhere, and they're currently living in Nashville, but they're not, or in the Nashville area, but they're not just people who are native to Tennessee and have lived there for years and maybe, you know, the old stories, but it's not. We have such a variety of people from all over the world.
So where are you pulling the data from for this paper?
So the paper is going to contain patients from Vanderbilt, University of North Carolina, Sarah Cannon Cancer Center, which is a large network of cancer centers.
It sounds like you're describing sort of a belt in the middle of the country.
Right, and it seems to come down the Rockies. So it's not, once you get over to the other side of the Rockies, I don't know of anybody on the other side.
A huge source would be the head and neck.